All right, we're back with It's Your Money and Your Life. And that was great having Vince Bartolotta Jr. on. And this segment and the rest of the show, we have a very special guest, a good friend of Richard, who he's known many, many years. He's the CEO of Genlantis, and his name is Tony Sorge. And Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. So, Richard, shall we take it away? Why don't you
take it away? So, Tony, we'd like to start with your background and your history, like where you came from, where you're born, where you went to school. And, of course, we always love to hear about how you made it out to sunny San Diego.
Okay. Good question. I grew up on the East Coast, and I grew up in that famous state of New Jersey, and went to college in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And after I graduated UPenn, I got involved in my family's business and did that for about 6 years. About 1 year into working with my family, I said, I got to find something new in life, and spent the next five making money and saving up and figuring out a way I could move out of New Jersey. About 1983 or 84, I got smart, and I took a vacation to San Diego.
Was it your first time here?
It was. And,
okay.
And my brother actually was working at Scripps Clinic. He was a researcher at Scripps.
Okay. Did we get into your educational background?
Yeah, we did, Joe. Okay. You were changing the thermostat or something.
I was. Okay. Yeah. I got my headsets off. I'm sorry. Okay. Keep going.
Yeah, so my brother was living in San Diego at the time. I took a vacation out here, and I just loved it. San Diego is such a beautiful place to live. And I told myself, all right, I'm going to figure out something where I can move to California and change careers and, you know, build a new life. I came out here with a couple ideas in mind, but changed after I started educating myself what was available. Remember, this was 1983.
Okay.
It was before cell phones. And
before computers.
Before computers.
Yep. And life was so easy back then.
At least on a commercial level.
So I was looking at different opportunities, and I remember spending 2 weeks looking for something I could change my life and move out to California. And I remember getting frustrated, and I was at my brother's apartment sitting on the couch. And
him or he or you?
I was, after working for 2 weeks straight, scratching my head.
Uh-huh.
And I remember looking on his coffee table, and there was this a catalog from a company called Amersham. And they were a life sciences supplier to researchers in the market. And they sold what I call are the genetic picks and shovels. So basically tools that people need to do the research. So I was thumbing through the catalog, and I saw an item called Lambda DNA. And I saw that They sold 10 micrograms of this Lambda DNA for $100.
Okay.
And a microgram is a millionth of a gram.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's very small.
A very small amount, and 10 micrograms for $100. So I quickly calculated, and I go, hey, that's $10 million a gram.
Right.
And the first question I asked my brother, I go, is this legal?
So you wanted to become a drug dealer, is this it?
But it was legal, so it was okay.
right.
So the next questions were, do you know how to make it? And he goes, yeah, I think I can make that. Second question was,
how fast?
How fast and what equipment do we need to make something like that?
Yeah.
He said, well, we need, you know, laboratory space. We need a centrifuge. We need this, need that. So we went through a list. And that's basically the time where I decided, okay, this is going to be my new career. I knew a little bit of science, but not a lot. And, you know, he was the expert. I was, you know, fairly proficient in running a small business. And, you know, this was a startup. So
what was your major in college?
It was natural science.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I took a lot of chemistry and biology classes, and even took a few business classes within the Wharton School. So just to prep myself for business. And, so we started up the company in 1984, and it took off. We came up with two or three original products, and our first product that we made sold $1 million in the first year.
Right. That company was called Stratagene, right?
It was called Stratagene, right.
Okay.
And, you know, we're both looking at each other. We go, this is great. So should we just stick with this one product? And you
so
know.
About 4 years later, you were, Ernst & Young gave you this award about only about 3-4 years later, right? I mean, Entrepreneur of the Year, right? I mean,
that's, yeah, that's a big deal. Company was extremely successful, and the timing was great. The early 80s biotech.
Where was your first plant or facility?
It was in Sorrento Valley.
Okay.
So we had, it was slightly under 1,000 square feet. It was a dinky little space, and we had one laboratory bench, and we had one office.
Were you near Qualcomm at all? Because they were over, yeah.
Pretty close. Qualcomm was, actually, I got a funny story. There was, before Qualcomm got started, they had a spot in the building that we leased for Stratagene, and I think the company was called Linkabit.
That's it. Correct.
Linkabit. Mm-hmm.
Harvey White and all
yeah.
that. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And we were just a bunch of young 20-something kids, and you know, we're playing Led Zeppelin loud. We had these hoaxes, like if we didn't play rock music, our preps wouldn't come out well.
Right.
And the poor guys at Linkabit, they were writing software code. I think they were through the next wall.
Erwin was blasting the classical music. Wow.
Exactly. So
it was like Ozzy Osbourne living next door to Pat Boone, which is a true story. They were next door neighbors in Beverly Hills.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny. They were next door, and, you know, we had our space. And
did you guys get along, or?
We didn't really have, you know,
much interaction.
They were writing code, and mm-hmm. we were, like, doing molecular biology, and mm-hmm. and I wish I got to know him a little better. I probably would invest in
it. Yeah, what about a few bucks of stock?
Exactly.
Anyway, that's great. So,
you guys grew rapidly. You grew up to what, about 300 employees by the time that you exited?
That's correct. And
wow.
We were doubling every year, as I said. Like
in 11 years, yeah.
Yeah, we did like, as I said, 1 million the first year, 2, 4, 8, mm-hmm. 16, 30. It was like exponential growth. And then we finally figured out, well, you can't keep doing exponential growth.
Yeah, forever.
So we started getting disappointed when we were growing 60% a year instead
right.
of 100.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. So you had a non-compete, and it took you, you had to wait 3 years to start up your Genlantis, right?
Yeah, and in between, I enjoy music, and you know, I got into doing stuff that had nothing to do with biotech, so I set up a little music studio.
And let's hear about that. What kind of music? Pop or rock or what?
This was in the middle of the 90s, so it was like R&B rap type stuff. And I knew very little about rap, but I had a pretty good background.
You did this in San Diego?
Did it in San Diego.
And what did you recorded some artists and tried to promote their
records? We did a few artists. And
anybody take off that we should know about or anybody we should not know about?
It was marginally successful, but what I could say, I had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, that's cool.
And another story in the music background is, you know, I've been playing keyboards for a long time, and one of my hobbies is collecting synthesizers, these Moog synthesizers.
Oh, yeah.
They're like electronic keyboards.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, for anyone that grew up when I
Moody
did
Blues.
Moody
right?
Blues.
Yeah.
And there was are you familiar with Emerson, Lake and Palmer?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
I got
sure.
a great story. I had this mini Moog synthesizer, and when my dad bought it for me when I was like 17 years old. Loved the thing, and about 4 or 5 years ago, I saw that the Moog company, they were doing this recreation of a Moog synthesizer that Keith Emerson played back in the day.
Wow.
And I called up the company, and I said, I want to buy one of those. And they told me the price, and I nearly died.
What did they say, $70,000
or something?
$150,000.
I nearly died. And
were they in East Coast? Where were they?
Yeah, the Moog company was, I believe they were in North Carolina.
Okay.
They had a shop there.
All right.
And I said, the only reason I'm going to buy this instrument if you introduce me to Keith Emerson.
Okay.
I go, you know, it's only logical. You're putting his name on it. They're
right.
calling it the Emerson Modular Moog Synthesizer.
And he should be happy anybody remembers him.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. He was great.
So what happened?
So they go, no way. Are you crazy? He doesn't work for us. He's, you know, he's got his own schedule. But, you know, and I said, all right, forget it. Keep your $150,000 synthesizer. So 2 days later, I get a call back, and All right, Mr. Sorge, Mr. Emerson's agreed to meet with you, but it'll be on his time, his space, his, you know,
schedule.
His schedule.
Yeah.
I go, fine, I'll fly to London. I'll have lunch, whatever he wants.
Hold that thought, because okay. That's a good cliffhanger. Yeah. We're going to come back with Tony Sorge, CEO of Genlandis, with all these great stories right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and this is the time where Richard likes to thank our sponsors.
Big thank you to our sponsors. We couldn't do this show without our sponsors. At the top of the list, hey, it's tax season. Why not? We got two groups of CPAs. We love them so much. Signature Analytics. That was last week's guest. Jason Kruger did a great show, great CFO service company for rapidly growing companies. Signature Analytics, also more traditional CPAs, Pulido Epic CPAs up in San Marcos, Don Epic and Paul Pulido. Also, our great friend Joel Grushkin. Like me, a San Diego State basketball fan, man, we are suffering. But anyway, Joel Grushkin, in his professional life, runs cost segregation initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Also, Paul Hines. Paul is going to be a guest, I believe, in early March, if memory serves. Paul, of course, is the CEO of Hearthstone Private Wealth Management, a great wealth advisory firm, fiduciary firm. And he also heads up SeniorSafeAndSound.org, an initiative here in San Diego that helps to prevent the financial abuse of the elderly. Also, VFO Hub and the Lombardi Group, helping wealth advisors make heroes out of CPAs to the CPA's very best clients, and then also offering a virtual family office solution. Also, Michelle St. Clair. Boy, she's been in every magazine in town recently. Articles about the great work that Elite Lifestyle Management does. A great concierge company that helps people like me who have no time save time, whether simple things that need to be done, like travel arrangements, to more complicated things, like getting into the most difficult to get in movie premiere in Hollywood last year that we got into, right, Joe?
Battle of the Sexes.
Battle of the Sexes, Elite mm-hmm. Lifestyle Management with Michelle St. Clair. Also, Happy Tax. Happy Tax, a great app-based, paperless income tax return preparation service that has really, really affordable pricing. And if you're sick and tired of giving your CPA tons of paperwork, Happy Tax is a great solution. And, Joe, a lot of our listeners skip dinner because they love our show so much, and we can help people who are getting hungry. By the way, we have a new food sponsor. That's Solana Beach Coffee Company. I'm going to talk about them more later on another show or two down the road. But you got some cool ones, too.
Absolutely. The Very Good Food Foundation, headed up by Michelle Ceccarelli-Lirac, putting on great foodie events and broadcasting events throughout the year. And also Lestat's Coffee Houses, the original in Normal Heights, University Heights, and a new one on University Avenue, all open 24/7, 365. And great food, great people watching, and great beverages and coffee. And I know many of these sponsors have been working with you, Richard.
Working with me.
Yeah.
For almost three decades,
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah, so yes. With great success. And, of course, if you go to iymoney.com, there's a sponsor tab.
They're all there.
Yep. A lot of information, all the contact information, and any or all of them can help you all with your lives and businesses. So there you have it. Now time to get back to Tony and...
And by the way, Justin, we need some Emerson, Lake, and Palmer movies coming in into the fourth segment or something, okay?
Okay. Anyway.
Giving you a warning. So back to the story.
Yeah, he was...
So Mr. Emerson said he was willing to meet with you.
Yeah, you're headed to London. Let's hear what happened.
Yeah, so I figured they'd call me back and say, okay, Mr. Emerson can meet you on, whatever, May 11th. You got to fly to London, and he only has 10 minutes to meet with you or something like that. So... we got this monster of a Moog synthesizer delivered to my house.
It's really big, right?
It's 500 pounds.
Wow.
So we basically had to get it earthquake-proof, too. We kind of have it clamped on where it's not going to fall over. So they sent a technician. He came down once or twice. And the second time he goes, I'm coming down. I have to do a few adjustments to these oscillators and modulators or whatever this tech speak. And he said, do you mind if I bring Keith with me? And I go, I go, what? You have a technician named Keith? No, Keith Emerson. I go, absolutely. I'm excited. I was like pinching myself. It's right. Like I get to meet
So he came to your house?
He wound up 4 hours later. He came down with his girlfriend and another technician that worked at Moog Synthesizer. And before he came down, I invited a bunch of my friends. I go, you got to come over. I got someone, a celebrity, he's going to be at my house. And so he came over. We have all this equipment.
What year is this, by the way? This
was a few years ago. It was two, three years ago.
Okay.
This happened. It was pretty recent.
Okay.
So he comes to my house, and, you know, I spent all – all afternoon trying to set up everything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go, if he's going to come here, he's going to play on, you know, some of the instruments we have set up. So he came over and, you know, he goes, well, I wasn't really prepared to play anything. And I go, well, you know, okay, that's fine. Let's just have a, you know, here's some hors d'oeuvres and, you know, here's a glass of wine and this and that. So he drinks a glass of wine. He goes, well, maybe I could test out something over here. So he got on the electric piano, started playing the piano. We had the keyboard to the Moog right above it. And he
Did you record any of this, by the way?
Some of it. We have it on. Wow. We have it on my Facebook, a little sequence.
Cool. Okay.
He started jamming. He goes, well, why don't you guys jam along with me? So my son's a really good musician, and he got to play with Keith. And and it was a terrific experience.
How old is that guy now? About 78 or so?
Yeah, he unfortunately passed about a year.
Oh, really?
A year or two.
As did Greg Lake.
Greg Lake, yeah. So those guys had a wonderful life and probably a lot of fun, and you know, they passed before their time. But
unless you're Keith Richard, in which case you have like seven lifetimes and will never die.
I was at the Desert Trip concert last year, and Mick Jagger got on stage, and he goes, I know why you people are here. He goes, this is the catch 'em before they croak concert. but anyway, getting back, Keith was a terrific guy. We got to jam with him. My son got to play piano. He knows a lot of Emerson, Lake and Palmer songs, my son, and Keith was really impressed. He goes, glad I'm passing the torch off to the youth. Good kid.
So Moog is that was an actual guy named M-O-O-G, right?
Yeah, Robert Moog.
Moog.
Yep.
He's like Kurzweil, one of those guys, right? One of these visionaries.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was a genius for all that type of electronic music.
Is he still around?
No, he unfortunately passed as well. All these geniuses are gone.
Yeah.
There must be a good jam session going on somewhere.
Well, it's going to happen. It's going to happen eventually, unless some scientist comes up with the immortal. Well, actually, Kurzweil, they said with nanotechnology and all this regeneration of tissues that we can be flirting with immortality, because if you need a new heart, a new kidney, this eye, brain, how close are we to that?
I keep telling people, if you can figure out a way to live another 30, 40 years, you're probably going to live another 200.
Wow.
So.
And the planet's not crowded enough, right?
Depends where you are, Joe. If you're in L.A., it's too crowded.
Well,
but
like
otherwise.
My dad, you say money goes to money, and you know what goes to the dumps. So anyway.
But Tony, you've got a really cool, I mean, since Genlantis, you're doing something really neat now. Well, we're talking about first responders now.
Yep.
Tell us about that, because everybody's got the flu except me.
Exactly.
Yeah, what was the genesis? What was the problem that you saw, and what is this trying to solve?
Okay, my company, Genlantis, makes a collection of tools for molecular biologists and cell biologists. It's pretty much what I said earlier, the genetic picks and shovels. Mm-hmm. We have a collection, a basket like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About 4 or 5 years ago, we got a lot of feedback from researchers that their cell culture room got contaminated, their prep got contaminated. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they spent all this time and labor on research products, and somehow, you know, some bug got, you know, mixed in with some of their research. And some of these bugs are pretty destructive for experiments, and sometimes they have to shut down the whole lab and pull all the equipment out and buy all new reagents and.
And very resistant too.
Well, you know, certain things. It depends on what they're working on. You know, a lot of researchers are working with non-pathogenic things, but still equally important when they're trying to do their studies. So we came up with a product that uses ozone gas, and ozone is just oxygen with an extra oxygen molecule on it. So it's O3. Mm-hmm. Some people call it
instead of O2.
Yeah, instead of O2, and ozone is probably the world's strongest oxidizer. Okay. So when you fumigate with ozone or you put it into purifying water, it works about 50 times faster than Clorox bleach for killing any types of infections.
And purifying, right?
And purifying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we figured out that it's not hard to produce ozone gas. You basically run a voltage charge over plates. Mm-hmm. And the voltage essentially changes O2 into O3, and you blow it out with fans. So we introduced this product to the research market, and we said, all right, put it in your incubator, you know, pull all your stuff out, put it in there, and you know, wipe it down first, do the best you can, but finish it off with ozone gas. And they really liked the product. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, we said, all right, where else can we go, you know, make this product? And we visited a local ambulance company in San Diego called AMR.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha. AMR is the largest ambulance company in the country.
Mm-hmm. But let's hold that thought right there, Tony, and we'll show how this has percolates around the country.
That means it.
We'll be back with Tony Sawyers right after this.
I can play this.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
All right. We are back with Tony Sawyers, CEO of Genlantis.
I like that, Justin.
ELP.
Yes.
Great job.
We're deviating from our TV themes just for Tony today, so that's
But
great.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
We're in our final quarter.
Thank you.
So first-responder.com, and tell us about how you proliferated amongst the ambulance community and first responder.
We brought our box that we use for the laboratory over to AMR, and they said, okay, let's try this in one of our ambulances. So we took some swabs before we used our box and, you know, basically stored them. And we said, okay, let's do our ozonation with our box. So we did it, and we took some more samples after we did our ozone. Essentially, they were shocked about what was growing in their ambulance prior to using our box.
I can imagine.
Knocked down everything that was growing inside the ambulance and then some. So they said, we love your product, but it doesn't look like something that we can use unless you put it in one of our orange Pelican cases. So we redesigned the product, put it in inside of one of their handheld Pelican cases, which is durable and flexible, and they're used to using it. And we came out with the product a couple years ago, and AMR loves them. They're starting to, you know, buy them up all over different places. And we actually got a call from one of their sites in Ventura where they had the Thomas fires. And they said, Tony, could we use your sterilizer for getting rid of smoke smell? Because their ambulance are on site, and basically the smoke just fumigated. They couldn't even get inside their ambulances.
Because ozone is a purifier.
And, you know, the smoke smell got inside of their ambulance, and he said, can we try your box? And I gave him the box, and they purified. He called me. He goes, I had no idea how well ozone gets rid of smoke.
Wow.
They actually use it in hotels for smokers, you know, get rid of it. It's used in the water supply. It's not a brand new technology, but we're finding applications, and we're bottling the technology. And
you're just enhancing it.
We're enhancing it, making it easier for people to use.
The other thing is I always have to go to hospitals to visit friends who are sick or in poor health or whatever, because I'm in my late 50s. So it happens, you know, I guess, to all my friends at that age. And I hate going to hospitals because every time I walk in, I'm healthy. And about 2 days later, after I leave a hospital, I get sick because there's so many germs in a hospital. And so I tell people now, if you go to the hospital, I'm not going to visit you because I don't want to get sick.
You're supposed to get well at the hospital.
You're supposed to get well, not sick.
Richard, you're doing it in reverse.
I know. But, I mean, there must be an application for hospitals, right?
Absolutely. The thing with ozone, it works terrific. It's great for a sealed-off area because you can't inhabit the room while you're using ozone.
Okay.
So we recently came up with another product that is a ultraviolet light source that's on a rolled cart. So it has these two giant ozone bulbs that you wheel into a room. Once again, you can't inhabit the room when this is on, but basically you turn on, and within 15 minutes, ultraviolet light, which is UVC, is a specific germicidal wavelength that our bulbs are. It's 254 nanometers, and that basically is destruction for all pathogens. So
does this help get rid of staph too? Because I know staph infections are a huge problem.
Methicillin resistant staph, aureus, MRSA.
Now you just got to get the doctors and nurses to wash their hands.
That's right. We came out with a handheld product where basically you could just shine it on counters where nurses are working or where patients were, so they can quickly use it with people in the room. As long as, you know, they're just shining it effectively where it is.
Now, I see we have the locker rooms, and locker rooms would be a great one, right? I see you have the fire department. It looks like a fire department here, a duffel bag sterilizer.
Yep, yep.
But boy, that I think about that college and pro sports in the locker room because these guys,
or are even getting, worse, high school.
Well, these guys are getting
That's right. The
these guys are getting staph infections all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, the football and wrestling locker rooms definitely could use equipment such as this. So we're really excited. I've been in biotech for 30 years, and these products are really enjoyable to sell.
This is great.
They're fulfilling. It's.
But also in terms of protecting first responders. I know they show up on scenes of accidents where there's blood and all kinds of bodily fluids all over the place, and they start trying to help people, and then they get sick.
That's right. And we created a couple products where one's a sterilizer in a Pelican-type case, so they could throw all their instruments that they used. Or we came out with these duffel bags that have sterilizers where firemen, EMS, they could throw contaminated gear inside these bags, press a button, and they basically could have sterilized clothes instead of bringing them back to the station or the ambulance company, or even just getting in their car and bringing them back home. If they could basically sterilize their clothing, where it's would definitely
so much safer.
I bet the Department of Defense might like to take a look at this too for medics working in war zones, right?
And I think the applications are pretty much worldwide, where you can use tools that have been around for, almost a century. Ozone, they knew about ozone a century ago. UV light, actually UV light was used a lot in the 30s, in the 1950s, and it helped eradicate tuberculosis. And then I think the pharmaceutical companies, and they got smart, and they said, all right, let's come out with some antibiotics, and there was a whole wave. Antibiotics are, obviously one of the essential tools for eradicating infections, but a lot of these
it's been abused over the years.
It's been abused, and these pathogens become resistant. So essentially, these antibiotics become resistant, and the only way to kill them sometimes are using really sophisticated antibiotics, or the best step that we use, and I think is useful ahead of time, is try to stop people from getting infected first.
Yeah, you're in the prevention business.
Yeah, prevention.
The antibiotics suggest that you have to be sick to use them.
That's right. So
just don't get sick to begin with. That's why this is so important.
So this might help also. I mean, we have flu bugs going around right now. By the way, does this take care of MRSA and every pathogen out there, by the way?
It sure does.
Wow.
And then there's different, depending on whether you're using UV light or ozone, you just have to basically give it enough to kill it, where actually it happens pretty fast. I'm amazed how fast ozone and UV light kill pathogens.
Sepsis, all this. This is great. So let's give the website one more time. First-responders.com. Dash is a hyphen. First-responder.com, right?
Yeah, and we also have a Facebook page honoring first responders. So we try to get, if you just search first responder, no hyphen on that one, on Facebook, you'll come to our Facebook page.
And Justin is coughing, so we're going to do this room. We're going to do this room right after the show is done.
That's right. Let me bring one of our devices.
Now, Tony, we just to switch gears for a moment, we had Dr. Sanjay Gupta on a couple weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Because I'm a big fan of CBD and cannabis. And what are your thoughts on the emerging CBD industry because a lot of people confuse cannabis with people just want to take it to get intoxicated, and I think there's a lot of medical applications for endocannabinoids, right?
I agree, and I'm not an expert by all means in any of that, but I understand that there's a lot of applications. People can use cannabis for treating different ailments, and
I mean, there's salves, there's balms, there's topicals, there's things that you can use for skin, and which I'm using for eczema, and it's actually helping quite a bit.
Yeah, but I think Jeff Sessions should just go smoke some pot.
Yeah, I was actually at the IACP in Philadelphia where Jeff Sessions spoke a couple months ago.
What does that stand for, the IACP?
It's the International Association of Chiefs of Police. So Jeff Sessions spoke there, and I was curious about and he was more against crackdown on opioids, and I'm not sure if they're going to do anything with cannabis. Yeah, they're basically going to let it go.
Yeah. But opioids and meth, those are the huge.
Those are the huge problems. They're serious. Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to your sterilizer, I mean, it looks like the sky's the limit. It almost looks like there's almost every business, every home, can have a use for this, right?
Yeah, you know, if they're safely used, and you know, you just follow the instructions on how to use them safely. We've been focusing mainly on first responders, you know, in hospitals.
But people die every year from getting sick in hospitals, right? That's
correct. And hospital-acquired infections.
Yeah, hospital-acquired,
HAIs.
HAI, right.
They knock off, you know, I saw a stat a couple years ago. It knocked off 99,000 people.
Jeez, it's more than cancer.
That's right. And they say it more than prostate cancer and breast cancer combined.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of mistakes with the prescriptions, too, I guess. But overall, I mean, I don't know what percentage it is. It probably is a very small percentage. But there's going to be mistakes in life.
That's why
we have Vince Bartolotta to thank to work on those things. Anyway, we have to wrap right there.
Tony, really appreciate it.
Tony Soares, CEO of Genlattice and FirstResponder.com, thank you so much. Richard Musil, great seeing you. Thanks to Vince Bartolotta for
being
our first guest.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Justin Harder, board operator, thanks for making us sound terrific. Thanks to Craig Blanke and Dave Sniff here at KFMB for all their help. All these podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.